Welcome to NPR Illinois' Community Voices. I'm Evan Holden, a graduate student in UIS's Public Affairs Reporting Program and a State House reporting intern for WGLT. I'm here with two of my classmates, Joshua Hightower from WCIA and Jack O'Connor from the Chicago Tribune, to talk about policy issues being debated this spring at the state capitol. Let's start with Joshua Hightower and his reporting on the Safety Act, which has once again become a topic of debate this spring as lawmakers look to reform the law. What are some of the debates that you are hearing during the spring session?
Thank you for the introduction, Evan. It's a pleasure to be with both you guys here today. Also, we're talking the Safety Act, which was originally passed in 2021, but now there's more debate coming about the legislation as, you know, different data and different statistics come out. So you've probably, you know, heard about it before. And the Safety Act, there's a couple of things concerning law enforcement, but today I want to talk about the specific policy of eliminating cash bail. So what does that actually mean? So before, whether someone stayed in jail before trial often came down to basically if they can, you know, pay for it. If you could afford to pay the bail, you can go home. If not, you could be locked up within pre-trial detention centers, even if you didn't have a conviction. But now the Safety Act flips that system. Instead of asking some of the detainees, you know, if they can pay, the court now asks, are you a threat to public safety or if you're likely to skip court? And if that answer is yes, the judge, you know, can still keep you in that pre-trial detention, but if not, you'll be able to get release. Now, a lot of our supporters are saying that this is supporters of this bill are saying that it's a major step toward, you know, fairness, and they argue that the old system, you know, punishes people just for not having, you know, the finances, and punishes people that are being alleged to commit a dangerous crime. But critics of the bill aren't sold on this reasoning. A lot of them say that, you know, removing cash bail could lead to more people being released who might reoffend, and they raise concerns about public safety. So data-wise, for the supporters, you know, they point to a couple of things to say that the Safety Act is working. Our 2024 report actually from Illinois Policy actually shows a decrease in the total prison population since that legislation was originally passed. But on the opposing side, we have some opponents pointing to deaths like Megan Bose last year. Her killer was someone who was a legal immigrant, and he was released because of some of how the pre-detention provisions currently are in the Safety Act. So some of the legislation that Republicans are trying to push are House Bill 4104, and I actually got to sit down with Leader John Curran, and he says that this legislation won't specifically change the Safety Act because they don't know exactly how they can do that yet, but they're using some of these other legislations to skirt around how the Safety Act is performing. So that bill would give judges more discretion on how they can detain people who are charged with felonies.
What is the app? Are there any Democrats who are looking to support that? What is the Democrats' appetite to reform?
Yeah. So in addition to John Curran, I also got the chance to sit down with Cam Buckner and Chris Welch during this session. And both of them, you know, constantly, you know, told me the Safety Act is working. So they are open to any changes, but they believe that this act is working. They don't see anything that's immediate that needs to be changed. So, of course, you know, this is a two-party country that they have to, you know, listen to the other side, but there isn't directly an appetite to get anything changed immediately.
Has there been any, in the data you've looked at, has there been any increase in failures to appear warrants statewide or in any local counties?
Yeah, so the data shows that pretty much everything has stayed consistent. Like, to the Illinois policy report that I referred to earlier, we have seen prison population, you know, go down totally. But as with any like failure to appear and things of that nature, it's pretty much has, you know, stay consistent. So isn't much of an argument for either side, you know, currently on how this bill works. So one of the things that Chris Welch did tell me is that he wants to see it, you know, in 5 years, you know, see what progress is being made.
Okay. We're going to now do a hard shift to a completely different topic, by which is going to be turning to Jack O'Connor and his reporting on a cell phone ban in K through 12 schools. How is the bill doing this spring session?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So this is year two of Illinois lawmakers and advocates looking to pass a school phone ban effort. Last year, we saw that lawmakers were able to get this out of the House without opposition, but the Illinois Senate never ended up voting on it. This go around, it's not only passed the House, it's passed the Senate. It does need to go back to the Senate for another vote since the House amended the bill, but it's looking in good shape this session. This was one of Governor J.B. Pritzker's big initiatives this session. And so, yeah, it's looking like it's on pace to pass this year.
Would this bill, since it's taken so long, some other schools have already implemented their own cell phone ban, would this bill at any way impact those schools that already have a ban?
Yeah, so any school that has already implemented its own sort of phone ban can continue this policy up until the 2030-2031 school year. At that point, those school districts will have to reevaluate their policy and make sure it aligns with the proposed phone ban policy that this bill seeks out to implement. And by that 2030-31 deadline, all schools will have to implement a bell-to-bell phone ban for the all middle and elementary schools. High schoolers, on the other hand, won't necessarily have to have a bell-to-bell ban. That will be up to each individual district. There are a few different exceptions for when a phone might be able to be used. Schools will need to allow phones for students who need it for medical reasons, those students who need it for English translation services, and for students who are also the primary caregivers for people in their family. Schools will also be able to allow phones in class if it's for educational purposes or during emergencies.
And when it comes to stakeholders, why do people want to get these phones out of classrooms? Where is that conversation coming from?
Yeah, this is a national effort to get phones out of classrooms. We're hearing from teachers, from parents, from lawmakers who are saying that phones are a distraction and are taking away from the learning experience. More than half of Illinois high school teachers say that phones are a problem. They are a distraction. They are leading to bullying. And so the idea here is that if we're able to get phones out of classroom, that we're going to see better learning, more engaged students, and just an overall better school environment.
Is there any way to make sure that this is properly enforced in the schools once they have implemented their procedures?
Yeah, that was the major holdup from last year. The reason it didn't pass was concerns from lawmakers that this bill might lead to unfair punishments or uneven punishments. Senator Michelle Mussman, who I spoke with earlier this year, told me that was really the big hiccup there. So what this current bill is going to do to prevent some of those concerns, to alleviate those concerns, is that it's going to prevent school districts from using fines, school resource officers, suspensions, or expulsions to enforce the ban. Now, if a student uses their phone and does some other act that could lead to one of those other policies, they can do that, but those can't be used for the sole discretion of enforcing the school phone ban. And also to ensure fairness, every school district is going to have their phone ban policy and therefore how those phone ban enforcements are going to work. publicly, so each teacher can see it, each student can see it, and each parent can see how this will affect the classroom and their students.
Thank you for that, Jack. And we're going to stay in the realm of education, and we're going to move to Evan here so he can talk a little bit about evidence-based funding, which does exist in some of our public schools, but now there's conversation on how we can get that to universities. So, Evan, what's the current conversation on that?
Yeah, so currently the bill has stalled in the House. It got further than last year, which stalled in the Senate, but it has got through committee this year. But then again, it has not come up for another reading or gotten a vote on the House floor. So it is once again stalled. It does have the possibility of coming back up in the budget, but that is still yet to be seen. This is very similar, as you mentioned, to the K through 12 evidence-based funding, except it has a very different formula because you're dealing with public universities, which also take in tuition, scholarships, which all become part of this formula. There has been some opposition to the EBF funding. The University of Illinois system has showed their opposition to this. They worry that since they are Urbana-Champaign specifically is the most well-funded public university out of all of them, that they will, when there's a decrease in funding or flat funding, they will receive the brunt of that funding loss comparatively to all the other universities. They are also concerned because of the way they fund each of their three universities. They have the main system that then pulls out the funds to each of their three universities, which is very different than some of the singular universities like Illinois State. Supporters of the bill, like Rep. Carol Ammons, who is the main sponsor of the bill, who represents Urbana-Champaign, says that the U of I system has not come forward to them to discuss the changes that they want to see in the funding formula. Everyone involved, both the opposition and the supporters, all agree that they want to see the evidence-based formula passed, but they disagree on what type of formula they want to see passed.
Yeah, so currently at the university where we're sitting at, they just got off a strike. So do you think, EBF, can come into a school like the University of Illinois at Springfield, help some of their funding challenges?
The university that I am also working for at WGLT, they are also currently in a strike too at Illinois State University. I definitely think it will help. Illinois State University has also shown their support to this bill. It is not necessarily to lower tuition, but to make sure it stays the same. It will help fund it, but the main issue, and this will be the issue that you will again see probably as these talks go on, is that the higher education has been underfunded for so many years at this point that it's going to take a lot of money to actually get in a good financial position for a lot of these universities. So the equitable funding will start that transition, but you won't see universities being able to stop the rising tuition for a couple of years.
Yep, and just briefly, you mentioned that some of the big universities like U of I say that they're going to be the ones that feel the brunt of this impact. Have there been any compromises in the legislature that U of I might accept on a EBF bill?
They, after the most recent changes with the endowments, by removing that from the formula, there have been no other talks of compromise so far. That the U of I did like that they got rid of the endowment, but it has not changed their opposition to the bill. They have not expressed any specific wants to change the EBF formula yet, but those discussions I am are still happening between lawmakers and the various universities.
So you mentioned that U of I was really opposed to this legislation. Are there any other hiccups that are maybe preventing this legislation from moving forward?
Currently, not that I've seen. I haven't seen any other hiccups other than there's just increasing concern about tuition increases. And I think the main thing, one thing that has not been the main issue, but has been funding. Again, we are in a tight budget this year with everything happening. The appetite to increase funding more than necessary for specific things like higher education might not be there in Illinois right now. Mind you, the K through 12 evidence-based funding did pass during the budget shortfall, but there might not be that political will this time. It really depends on if people want to continue funding higher education, which it has been historically underfunded. That would be the only main opposition to also why this has not gone past so far. That is all the time we have today. Thank you so much for listening, and you can replay this conversation at nprillinois.org.